Hello and welcome to this King Heroes Journey podcast. My name is Beth Martins and I have the incredible pleasure of hosting David Bradley today. Before I get started and introduce him, I'll let you know you're in the right place if you're looking for strong men who are willing to get out in front and say the things that might be unpopular, that might not land them the perfect job in the mainstream, but it will be an example of following the soul's calling. I am a huge fan, a recent huge fan of David Bradley. He was a producer and show creator for Viacom. David worked as Dave Chappelle, a rehearsal stand-in in set production. And he also was part of a design team on NBC, Queer Eye for Straight Guy, also stunt unit PA for Spider-Man 2. That's so fun. Just to name a few of his projects. In 2007, he began to lecture about sexual harassment in the entertainment industry. As we all know, that's come so far forward into the mainstream eye. There's lots behind that. And he is the author of a book that I have begun to read. It's an excellently written book. I actually want to make sure I told you that because I'm a big fan of good writing. It's called BETD, Brad and Me. It chronicles his experience of dealing with sexual harassment from the VP of the network, as well as the sexual harassment of women in that industry. His book explains how symbolism and mythos in the mainstream music and TV film industries are having the intended effect on the masses. So I cannot wait to get into this conversation. Symbolism, mythos, archetypes, as you know already, are a big part of my subject. So welcome, David. Thank you so much for joining me for this interview.
Oh, thank you. It's cool. I like what you're about. So this is my pleasure.
I appreciate that very much. So do you want to get started and in your own words? So I've just given a little overview, but do you want to just say a little bit about yourself and what appears to be a movement that you are on right now?
Well, let's see. I'm 48. I have over 20 some odd years of television production and film production experience behind me. As you stated, I interned with MTV and VH1, and then I moved over to Black Entertainment Television, which was always my dream, of course. I was an actor. I've been off Broadway. I think I made it to 49th and 7th Avenue. That was close. Not quite Broadway, but so it was off Broadway. But I was also in the Negro Ensemble Company, the same school that Denzel Washington and Samuel Jackson attended. Oh, geez, I've done so much. I've forgotten about half of what I've done. But like you said, I was a producer on Black Entertainment Television, which is a Viacom-owned station. And I created a show for them called Spring Bling, which ran for 10 years, made them millions of dollars in sponsorship fees, which I saw none of. I was Dave Chappelle's stand-in. So when he left for Africa, I already knew what that was about because he told me about it. Charlie Murphy was like a mentor of mine, which is really cool. I was on the set design team for the original choreography for the Straight Guy. I didn't even know what it was. I just took a gig and, you know, saw a bunch of gay guys. I had no clue, but then I found out what the show was, but it was such a fun experience. Great experience. See you, Cat.
And I promise.
Spider-Man 2, Law and Order stunt unit. I've been fortunate to do a lot in my hometown. I have an honor ceremony that I do every year because we have so many people from my town of Willingboro, New Jersey, that are successful. Like the CEO of eBay, is Jamie Wynoni, is from my town, and it's funny because Jamie was like, my school was like 97% Black, and Jamie was like the one white kid. He was always like, have a briefcase, so we all voted him like most likely to be president, so no one's surprised that Jamie Iannone doing it. But we have athletes, NFL players, actors on television now. Barack Obama's head of security was from my town, the NBA vice president of broadcast. So we have a lot of people. So I've been able to be in the community, in my community. I've been very community oriented. And then in 2000, I went through a ritualistic process that a lot of people would call, you know, conspiracy theory, Illuminati, but I actually went through it. And then the president, the VP at the time, I felt it was inappropriate. Nothing happened, but I don't believe that any subordinate should ever sit in There's never a time that a person that's a subordinate should be around their boss and their boss is ever fondling themselves. It's inappropriate. Period. End of story. I know the man pulled nothing out. Okay. You understand? And I'm not, and I'm a guy that comes from, so a lot of times when I would come out, people would say, oh, you're homophobic. Wrong. What they don't know is my daughter's godmother, she's gay and married to a woman. My daughter's other guy, and she's an actress. My other daughter's other godmother is in a basketball hall of fame. She's gay and married to a woman. So I don't tell my business. But, and then also I was a part of the house music scene in New York City. And anyone will tell you, you cannot be homophobic and be in the house music scene. It just don't work because that is the homosexual scene. That's that they literally have to accept you when they sing. And it's just that me and my friends were such good hip hop dancers that they respected us and would let us come in and do our thing. And I was never approached. They all knew I was heterosexual. So it was not about homophobia to me because I've been around enough gay people in my, I worked on Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, for Christ's sake. Me and Carson, the most flamboyant one, was cool as hell. He always respected me for being heterosexual. So it was not about homophobia. It was about the fact that, like, yo, my man, you're totally inappropriate. Like, you should not be staring at me while you're fondling yourself. I've never done it to women or a guy. So, and I even in college had a friend that would, when he got comfortable, slide his hands down his pants like Al Bundy. And I always used to be like, yo, dog, that's why I don't shake your hand. But I never felt uncomfortable. I was like, yo, dog, what you doing, man? He'd be like, yo, chill, man. And that it was a laugh. But this night, I was like, but the funniest part about it was, as a guy, as a man, as I'm sitting in the limo, staring out the window to keep from looking at him, I said to myself, damn, is this what I made chicks feel like when
right. That was fascinating.
The most ironic part was I'm sitting there like, yo, so all them times when I was young and took a girl out and like, yo, we going and I'm expecting something. And all them times I thought I was looking at her like Denzel, I was looking this creepy. Yo, I got it.
Oh, man.
I got it. I was like, yo, that's what we do. This is how it comes across.
Right on. That's so good.
It was bugged. I laughed. I said, yo, that's funny as hell. Because in my mind, I'm looking like Denzel, but I'm trying to get the. I didn't know what it was looking like. I thought we looking smooth as men. Like, yeah, baby, I just paid for this dinner. What's up? No, it's some creepy shit. And I got it. Yeah. I was like, ladies, I get it. But you know the most ironic part about that too? The other ironic part was when I was talking about myself and my incident, I was still booking work. You know, when I got shut down and blacklisted?
When
I went on to the Wendy Williams talk show and I started talking about what women go through. And from that, she gave me the floor. But from that moment, finito. No work. I'm not talking to you. I don't know you anymore. And I was like, so when it was just me, it was good. But when I brought up the ladies, it was like, you don't do that. And I paid a price for that. So the Me Too movement can say thank you to me, because I challenge anyone to do the research and find someone before me that was speaking about the sexual harassment that women go through. And I was always, like I told you off interview, I'm very Pan-African. Like Pan-African, like white people never came in my home Pan-African. I'm being real with you. But my best friend was a white kid growing up, which is why I know that you can be who you are with respect, because he listened to Aerosmith, I listened to Run DMC. And I was Fight the Power. We went to go see Do the Right Thing by Spike Lee together. You understand what I'm saying? And I'm Black Power all the way as a child. And that was my best friend, a German kid. So nobody can tell me that respect doesn't take you a long way. He respected my views, I respected his. End of story. Beautiful. Never had issues. Beautiful. And his whole family loved me. But needless to say, I learned a lot from that experience, because I was always, like I said, Pan-African. So I was known as the conscious black dude within the station. I was the guy that when we had executive meetings that would say, hey, man, do we have to play all these videos where these women are half naked? I'm the type of dude that my homeboys in college did not bring me to the strip club, because I would go and within 5 minutes, I'm looking at the woman on the stage going, damn, sister, like, what you doing this for? That was me. And anyone would say that was always me. So
amazing. Amazing. So if you, Yeah, if you mind, let's back up a little bit. I'd love to ask, first of all, what inspired you to get into the entertainment industry in the first place? And then what was that turning point where you decided to go and speak your truth and say, okay, that's it. I don't care if I'm, or maybe you didn't even know you were risking your career, but you know, what inspired you to make that pivot? Maybe you already shared, you had that like, you know, kind of creepy moment.
Nothing deep about entertainment industry. You know, I was just a lazy bastard in college. My mother used to always, I went through like 25 majors in college, but I was like, but I worked in the vice president of academic affairs office. And then I knew the president of the college because we was cool because I found out he played basketball when all the other kids, students would leave him alone. So he helped me rig an election to win the presidency. This is why I know in politics it works. It happens for real because he did it. But my mother always said I was lazy. So my junior and a half year, I sat down on my bed and I was like, damn, yo, what do I want to do? And I said, mom's right. So I thought about sports, but my days of playing ball was like, I'm good, but I'm a better coach. Mm-hmm. And then I said entertainment, because as I said, I was in the house music scene and we used to be around the guys that all used to dance for Mariah Carey when she first came out. She had this Dream Lover video because we would practice the routine with them, but they would never let us come with them. So I like know the whole routine to her first major video. And then I asked the question and auditioned for Spike Lee's He Got Game. And I got the role, lost the role because I'm 6'3", the main character 6'4", whatever. Then I got booked on New York Undercover as a stand-in for one of the main characters. And being bored, I started asking questions around the set. And then I said, yo, this is what I want to do. And then my other friends, they were in the same vein, but one was interning for a magazine. The other had a show on campus. So I just went off and found me an internship with a director who robbed the studio of a lot of money and ran off and left me holding the bag. But they knew I was an intern, so they knew I didn't know anything. I remember when he did. It was a great experience, though. And then I talked my way into MTV, which I found out no one ever does. And then that was really it. It's no deep story. I just didn't want to have a real job.
Perfect. Perfect. And no, I love that.
And when I decided to speak out, again, as I stated earlier, that was always me. I was like little Michael Evans from Good Times. My mother said I came out the womb talking black shit. She said half the stuff I was saying, she'd be like, how do you even know this? And I would just come out like, and black people, da-da-da-da. So, and then I reached, about 2 years ago, I found a journal from my senior year in college. I predicted what I was going to do because it was a journal about being black in America. And I was like, you know, as a black man, my job is to stand up for my people, even if it means losing something that you love to do.
There you go.
So it was always me. I was always conscious of who I was as a human being and a quote unquote black person. I always knew that I'm a Native American. I'm not African American. Mm-hmm. That's always my argument with black people, is that the reason why you don't get what you want is because your land was occupied. Mm-hmm. Cristobal Colon stepped on this land and waged war. This was not, so that's why I tell black people, when you're fighting for equality, you get what you get because this is your home. You are the Native American. And the Native Americans know this. That's why when they live on their plantation that was given to them by the government, they have such drinking problems because it's called wine and spirits. And their ancestors are rolling over in their graves going, what are you doing? But long story short, I knew myself. So even when I did, when I was on the show Rap City, the longest running hip hop show on television, the models would ask me to walk them to the sets because I was the conscious brother. I wasn't going to let you just do what you wanted to do. Put it to you like this. There's an Oscar winning actor that is caught up in a sexual harassment situation right now. I stopped hanging with him because of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The last time I hung out with him was at a club in Miami called Bed. And I'll never forget. And he was always, I used to call him Biff. Because I was like, whenever you get drunk, you either want to fight or you get real touchy, grabby, feely with women. And he used to get mad because I used to call him Biff all the time. Like, all right, Biff, you got a couple drinks. And we're in this club and he walks up behind this woman. Mind you, we the only two black dudes in the club. They know him, but they don't know me. So he walks up to this white woman and he grabs her breast and starts humping her from behind. And she didn't know who he was, but when she realized who he was, it was like, oh, I rolled up on homeboy. I said, yo, what the you doing? I said, yo, we the only two black men up in this club, homie. And you know what this man said to me? Oh, Dave, I'm just having fun. Mm-hmm. I looked at this dude, I turned my back and walked out VIP and never saw him again until I saw he was in trouble for the same stupid acts that he was. That's why I've said he don't want me to start talking because he will owe all them women money because he does do it. So that's why I stopped hanging with this Oscar winning actor. And I'm pretty sure that you can deduce who I'm talking about.
it'll take a minute, right?
So yeah. I've always been that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I've always been like that.
That's beautiful. Yeah. So where in there, if there was the struggle? That's an awkward way to ask that question. But where in it did you struggle?
What do you mean?
Say with your own inner, like you're describing a place where your morals came up, if I'm not paraphrasing badly there, that, you know, you saw that this was not within the scope of your morals and how you want to act and be seen.
It's not about morals for me. It's not about morals. It's not about right or wrong. It's about standards and decency. To me, that's what the society is missing. Like, yo, I work in education. And I tell everybody when it comes like the LGBTQ2 move, I can't remember it. QT, my homegirl gets mad at me all the time because I mess it up.
Yeah.
But XYZ. I was like, you do what you want to do. But I would challenge a lot of these people, the transgender movements, et cetera, come with me to the middle school. And after about 10 minutes of seeing these 10, 11, 12 year old children who all they hear is sexuality. And after you've told the fifth time you told two little boys stop fondling each other, or you had to tell them little girls take your hand off her breast, or you got this child over here who's confused as hell, talk to me then, because our babies are watching and there's no standards. Where's the decency? And that's what I'm about. I'm not about right or wrong. I'm about standards. Like, yo, like there was no reason for you to do what you just did. Mm-hmm. So it was, I reiterate, as difficult as it may be to believe it, I was always like, I have a soul. If you need to be told what's not effed up and what is effed up, you have no soul.
Amen.
I didn't need to be told that you shouldn't rape somebody. I just automatically, you know, seems like something you just don't do.
Yeah.
Why do you need to be told that?
Right. So, in my world, that's the lover archetype that has that discrimination, that can see the truth.
Yeah.
Via the connection with your own soul. It's not you. I don't have to go ask anybody or survey or you know, check in, is this the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do? It's not about that. You just have that inner knowing, and we all have that.
I got stuck in the lover's archetype for a very long time. The lover's archetype will make you destroy yourself for someone else that doesn't even know that you're doing it. I've been in a lot of jams being stuck in the lover's archetype. Especially being a Virgo, because we're of service, our energy is of service anyway. We're nurturers, we're givers. And being a Virgo and being that sign, you can be stuck in a lover's archetype.
Right. Is there any example of that you can think of where you're getting stuck in that lover archetype?
What I did, standing up, because you're losing and no one is there to pick you up. You feel what I'm saying? So me being stuck made me go too hard. Like I went that I'm like, in hindsight, being more experienced, like I waged war on everybody. Like I was like, I always say based on the different genres, but I'm gonna pretend that you know what I'm talking about. I was on some Tupac hit 'em up shit. So you know who Tupac is, right?
I've heard of it.
Why I said I'm one of the greatest guests you'll ever have. I'm gonna hook you up. So anyway, it was a rap song that a diss aimed at this other rapper, Notorious Big. And he started the song with first off. So I'm like, whenever someone gets mad at you and they say first off, you got a problem. So I was a type that when I waged war on the president, anyone standing near him was going to get it, including my best friend. We didn't talk for 15 years. Me and this dude was best friends for 15 years. I brought him into BET. And after that situation, we didn't talk for another 15 years up until I decided to move past the BS, because it wasn't between him and I. It was something of third party. And but he was standing too close to the vice president. And I told him that. I was like, yo, you too close to him. If I tell you, know me, if I wage war, move out the way. And if you're standing in here, I'm busting off shots, and it is what it is. And I'll talk to you later about it. But yeah, so that's why in hindsight, I go, all right, you didn't have to wage, because there probably were people that would have helped me out, but I was lashing out. But as I told the one executive that did call me, I said, well, what did you expect? Like, what type of behavior do you expect from a person that just happens to?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Right. So from what I've read also, you really did risk everything by going on, as you said, Wendy Williams, and you went into a place where, you know, from having the good life to having the opposite and doing some couch surfing and homelessness. Do you want to talk about that, what it was like to go through? So because you stood up for your standards and then you're as if paying the price of that.
My life was on the line.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that Hollywood shit is real. But it was the most fun time of my life because I'm a warrior by nature. Bring it. Mm-hmm. But I was intelligent, because if you're going to come at me, I was in my neighborhood. Dig, I was with my peoples. So if you was going to come at me, you was going to come through the hood. Because the thing about me is I know just as many cats on the block as I do in the boardroom. When I would do a lot of my work, they would be like gang members that I'd be talking to and building with. I've got kids that I've had run up on me in a suit. Like, you don't remember me? I'm like, nah. And they're like, yo, remember that? I'm like, wow. Like, I was so in the community that when I left, when I had to separate from my daughter's mother, I came maybe like 3 months later, I was in a store and some kid who was a straight up Crip, tatted up, blood, Cripped up, had the mask on and everything, said, hey, man, can nobody say that that ain't your little girl? And I'm like, what? He was like, yo, we watch your daughter. We make sure that she good. Because I used to always take my daughter to the park where they hung out. And I would be the one adult who would never walk away. And I didn't realize that they respected that. So he was like, nah, we make sure she's good. When your mom, baby's mom come up, don't nobody be around them. We be making sure she all right. So that is the type of person that if the power that be was going after me, you make me a Jesus. You make me a Jesus piece. I'm a martyr. If I walk out here right now and skin my knee within 24 hours, I'm Black Jesus, because everybody's going to read my book. And I wrote it in 2007, but it sounds like I wrote it just last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I was ready for war. It was fun to me. It was some of the most pleasurable experiences was meeting some of the most brilliant minds that are sleeping on the streets. You dig? Like,
yeah.
Not everybody can say that this actor, I slept on their sofa, yo. That, you know what I'm saying? Or this actress, yeah, I seen her with no makeup. You understand? Like, so the craziest part was the people that protected me the most, that I've had rappers, women, walk up to me and just put 200 in my hand, like, keep it moving. I don't even say nothing back. You dig? It was the entertainers that made sure I ate. It wasn't the people in the industry, the co-workers. It was them. I slept on the sofas of these entertainers.
Wow.
You dig what I'm saying? And they didn't have to. They could have been like, yo, dog, but they knew I was right. And they knew what was going on was wrong. It's just that the gatekeepers are the people that are working behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And I know you might not want to hear this, but a lot of the gatekeepers are women.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody turned their back on me more than the women. Like, I hear the guys, people go out to guys, and we go, oh, Jeffrey Epstein. But I'm like, the dirty little secret in society is, yeah, he was a creep, but he wouldn't have got a third of those women if it wasn't for the three women that helped him. And I know for a fact that it was never men that came to me and said, please don't ever reach out to me again. It was women. I was never attacked by males. It was women that attacked me for speaking out. Right now, to this day, it's the women that won't deal with me from BET. It's not the men, the women. I'm looking on. But I get it, because you had a position. And now people may expect you as a woman to say something when you like your job. That's what I thought was interesting when I was watching your Bitches Brew segment. I was like, yo, y'all need a dude up here, because I get it. But the dirt, like, I put it to you like this, the women, I hate calling it a women's movement. It just sounds so whack to me. But what's going on right now reminds me of Black America. As a child growing up, we look at white America, we look at you and go, you, racism, you. But I've totally ignored the coons and jigaboos standing right over there that are helping the powers that be coming to my community. Mm-hmm. And I encourage, and it's to the point now, that's why you see Black America can't get, you would think in 2020 we'd all be able to get together on one accord. You know why? Because all the sellouts, coons, and jigaboos have had their way, because we don't want to just say, gotta look at my Black community. No, you're always the problem. And I see women doing the same exact thing. I work in education, I repeat, you will find way more women being losing their jobs and being arrested for molesting these students than you'll find men. But no one talks about it. And so when we go in society, we go to men, look at y'all men, what y'all doing, how y'all acting. It's like, yeah, but as I explain in the entertainment industry, for every woman like you that goes, I'm not with that, you do realize there's 20 women right behind you that will get on their knees, right? You understand where I'm coming from? So as barbaric, say that again.
I totally do. I consider myself a recovering feminist. So I'm absolutely on this page with you. Totally. And I want to dive into the gender split, because that's actually a really big part of my theme, as you know, from having gone through my book already. I'm curious, do you feel like this is all your God-given purpose, that the way that you've come through your career, that change that you made, this platform that you're on right now, the book you've written, do you feel pushed by your purpose?
Well, for one, I would love for you to stop saying a change. I'll reiterate, always been that guy. You can talk to people from elementary school and they will go, yo, that's him. That's the beauty of what I like about social media. When I do these, like when I do more urban, lectures on the urban side of everything, is I love the fact that people are like, yo, I went to college with homeboy, he was the same way. Oh, yo, I went to high school with him. Yeah. Oh no, I was always, how I met my white best friend, because all the brothers was picking on him. And I walked by and said, yo, man, what y'all fuck with that white boy for? He ain't mess with y'all. That's how we met. And then the kids started following me around. I said, yo, and after about a week, I said, what's up? He said, yo, you're the only Black person that defended me. And I was like, whatever, yo. But he just kept following me around. So then it got to the point that I realized he was a really cool white kid. And I was like, all right. You understand? So I've always been this dude. The times I've gotten arrested was for standing up. I was in Harlem on 137th Street, 3 a.m, just taking a walk, seeing two brothers in a tinted out Impala. Oh, I knew they was dirty with drugs, and the cops knew they were dirty with drugs, but the problem was there was 20 cops and two of them. I stopped, and that was the first time I ever got arrested, because I wouldn't leave. I was like, nah, yo. And when I remember walking by, them dudes looked at me like, oh God, please, somebody, don't leave us. And I wouldn't do it. So this has always been me. Always, always, always been who I was. Almost to a detriment. Sure. Now, what was the question you asked? The part of that?
It's about purpose. It's about calling that is, you know, do you feel like this is something? Because I coach on the hero's journey, and almost always, you know, first of all, we're being lied to that we're not the heroes of our own journey. It's somebody out there. It's some celebrity. It's some product. It's some, you know, company or government, corporation, whatever it is that is going to save us. But really, in truth, we are the hero of our own journey. And it comes, they all come with reluctance, because God is telling you to do something outside of your comfort zone to get, you know, and it sounds like you were not, like you said, you didn't have that that internal shift going from being one person to the next person, but the shift is away from ordinary life, where things can just sort of tick on, you know, and everything goes as planned, and you get the paycheck and the notoriety, and you live your life and have, you know, date many girls, as you wrote about in your book, and then there's
that.
Right. Absolutely no judgment. And then there's the cut from ordinary life. And all of a sudden you go from having this life, and then you're sleeping on the couches and you don't get the jobs. And so that's what I'm talking about in terms of that shift, where it's often something that hero won't really choose, or they won't dream up, because it's coming from beyond. God is saying, like, actually, you're an instrument in this, you know, for this truth or this transformation that other people will make, because purpose is always about, it can't be just about you. That would be no purpose at all. It would be totally empty. The fullness is in your connection to humanity, how you contribute and how you help them on their hero's journey. So you feel like this is your purpose?
Yeah, I can give you two versions. One version is the very mainstream version. Then the other version is the version that either you're going to go, oh God, or you're going to say, wow. So the mainstream version is, I as I wrote in my book, I loved being quote unquote black in America. To me, it was a bomb. I don't care what nobody said. Working for a black television station, considering that I didn't always want to be in entertainment, was a great idea to me. And I cared. So when you reach a point where I'm knowing factually that you're putting garbage on television that has an agenda that's the total opposite of what my vision of Black America was, I was going to speak up. Because you don't sell out your people. Mm-hmm. That was selling out my people. Because I'm watching our children respond negatively to what they are viewing image-wise. I'm watching it. I still stayed in the hood. So I lived on like 147th and Frederick Douglass in Harlem. Them cat, when I would go to the block and hang out, they ain't know that I worked for BET. I was just chilling. So I would hear them, everybody in regular America, in regular society, and the thing that they would say. And I began to realize, like, yo, this is kind of messed up what we're doing, because we're doing it on purpose and they don't know this and they're taking it seriously. So I started making changes in things that I did, in the sense of I always told a story. I put on a rapper who was hustling, selling drugs, whatever, but there was a story to it. There was a narrative behind it. There was a purpose. That's why all the artists that I put on to this day are still relevant. That's why everything that I was around to this day, including Dave Chappelle, is still relevant. So that was always my thought process. I'm thinking about my people. Like, I didn't watch a lot of TV growing up. Like, I hated the Dukes of Hazzard because I didn't see me on it. I didn't watch anything if I didn't see a brown person, period. Didn't care how great. That's why there's a lot of movies that people talk about that I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Never watched it. Never watched the Dukes of Hazzard. Never watched Friends. Sorry, yeah. I was watching Martin and them. Like, I've been friends. Like, you're going to tell me you're in New York and you don't see nobody black? You can't know nobody black? I'm good. Keep it moving. Like, I also didn't watch shows where no women were on it. So, like, with my daughter, when she's growing up, if women weren't on the show, she couldn't watch it. I didn't care what color the women were. Give her women. I didn't want my daughter sitting and watch a bunch of white males in particular telling her how to live her life. That is stupid. Because as a male, I only know but so much. In particular, my view on white males when I was growing up. I thought they were the dumbest of the dumb. I'm just being honest with you. That's how I view white males. Like, what? My friend would say stuff about women that would be like, where the fuck you get that from? Because in his mind, he innately thought some stuff, being a male. And I have students that are like that. That I love my little guys. But I have some white, because I'm in different types of schools. And I've noticed that the little white males, like, I'm in like rich white schools as well as urban schools. And it's always the little white males in middle school with the most effed up mentality of life. And I'm looking at them like, yo, who is team? But the little white girls aren't like that. They're like, we are the world. Let's have fun, everybody. You know what I'm saying? And then I began to realize, like, yo, it's y'all. It's these little white kids. Like, how do you come off as like a MAGA and you're 11? But I love the kid. Like, one of my favorite students, name is Gary. I love that. Is my guy. He loves Mr. Bradley too. But he, if you listen to him, you'd be like, yo, you're going to grow up and be stone cold racist. So that's what I joke with him. It was always like, I've messed up your life because you think so highly of me, you can't say nothing bad about black people no more, because you're going to feel like a hypocrite. Because you're going to be sitting there like, yeah, but I do like Mr. Bradley. So it's crazy to me, that mentality. So I always battled that. And the book I wrote for my daughter, because I know in Western civilization, they keep records through books and television. So I said to myself, my baby's always going to know what her father thought. She's never going to think I'm one of these weak-ass African-American dudes out here who wants equality and wants a hug. I was never that guy. Give me my lip. I want my liberation. I don't want to live. I used to enjoy growing up in the 80s when it was separate, because I learned a lot watching the Beach Boys and the Valley Girls. Like, I thought they was cool as hell from afar. Like, yo, you know, or the preps. I thought it was cool that we were separate, because you could learn. Like, I remember I was one of the first brothers with the little button-down sweater, because the preppy white kids was doing it, but brothers wasn't rocking that joint. So me and my boys threw the joint. We just, you know, hooded it up a little bit, and it was dope. I remember getting the trend of getting tattoos when it started in the hood, because we got it from the skateboarding white kids. They was doing, we was like, so I mean, we got tattoos, like, that's kind of dope. And they would see us and take things from us. So I enjoyed almost the segregation, because I felt you could learn so much more than if everybody's sitting together. Now, who's going to pretend to be like who? So now I guess I got to pretend to be like you to make everybody satisfied. And that was corny to me. So for me, I always lived like that. And so I wrote the book for my daughter so that she would know. And the only reason why I'm coming out now is because my daughter asked me why I stopped talking. Because she was young and she used to go with me to the lectures. I have lectures where they're sitting right next to me. And she was like, and I was like, because, you know, nobody really cares. She's like, yeah, because that's how I felt at the time. Like, look how I look. No one cares. You dig what I'm saying? And I've suffered from PTGS, post-traumatic growth syndrome. So I'm no longer a victim. So I've taken what happened negatively and moved on and done so many things that people look at me and go, ah. So on top of the physicalities, most people are surprised that I'm into comic books. I just make it look cool. Most people don't think I'm as esoteric as I am. So I'm like, I get judged on how I look. So when I came out and said it,
there you go.
If I was a white dude or I was lighter, I'm positive my story would have been taken like, what? But look at how I look, everybody's like, whatever.
Yeah, that was my next question. How do you manage the stress of
No stress. Nah, because I knew it was my walk. It was my walk. With a hard time, yes, financially, but I also always sucked with my finances. So you dig where I'm coming from? I may have been broke, but I darn sure had enough to buy my weed. So was I really that broke? You feel what I'm saying? So half of it was on me. That's why I work with my daughter so much on her finances. That's why I have like the little green light debit card, because I want her to learn, because I didn't learn. So, but I've dined with senators. I've sat with Al Gore and he paid for my lunch. You dig where I'm coming from? I've met people that will tell you stories about meeting extraterrestrials. I've met people that have, the people that I've met in this walk, ain't no way in hell could I sit and tell you I was stressed out. The people that I've met, the experiences, I've sat at the feet, like the average African American would talk to you about Black history. This, I sat at the feet of Dr. Ben, one of the most notorious African scholars. I sat at the feet of Kwame Ture and listen to that man tell me that they did not fight for the right to vote. That's a misnomer. They fought for the right to have the right. Voting is just what made the government pay attention. So when I see Black people say our ancestors died, no, they did not, because I've sat at the feet of these elders. None of this would have happened. I have the most beautiful little girl. None of this would have, it wouldn't have been her spirit. So that's where my conundrum is sometimes. I'm like, yo, the life I live. And anytime I wanted to be on a film set, it was nothing but a phone call to her godmother. I've been on film sets with Adam Sandler and Chris Rock, and we chilling. You know, I mean, I've been able to. It takes 10 years to change a culture, a generation. For the past 10 years, I've been in education. And there's a bunch of children right now, when that whole Christopher Columbus thing happened, there's a bunch of children that would go, Mr. Bradley said this 3 years ago. I stayed dismissive. I would purposely go, like when we would go on U.S. history and they would talk about the Holocaust. My favorite thing to do, when I go to a child and go, ask the teacher what was happening in 1932 in America. Ask them. Then they ask the teacher what was happening, and they would, teacher would go, well, kind of the same thing. And I just got all the students like, I had a ball. Like I have children that are athletes. I have children that have through my acting classes been on Broadway. Man, please, nothing happened. That man didn't touch me. He was just inappropriate. So I have no regrets.
Yeah. Do you feel the responsibility of it as a leader? That obviously you have an amazing attitude, and you know you're just drinking it all up and not even registering the stress or willing to call it the stress. But I do know from having supported many King heroes in my world that when you're out in front, you take hits. You take people's bad energy. They try to take you down. There's all kinds of things, obstacles, even just sort of normal obstacles. Life, exactly. It's just life. It's a responsibility. So how do you manage that? It's just all up here for you. You just adjust your attitude in that beautiful way that you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's like this time you see me ticked off. I've probably been more ticked off with my daughter's mother. That's my stress. just trying to get on the same page with her. Mm-hmm. But I never cheated on her. I never beat her. I never lied. In my mind, we just were two different people. And maybe I don't know, afraid of commitment. I don't know. Whatever. But any stress I had was stress that I brought on due to the lover's archetype. Because the lover's archetype, if you don't recognize it, doesn't allow you to go, it's not my problem anymore. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, the lover's mm-hmm, archetype yeah. will make you feel that if you move, the next person beside you falls and they'll lose. Not realizing that if you move, if they fall, no problem, you can still catch them. So mm-hmm,
exactly. That's that nurture you were talking about as well.
Right, the nurture, right. So I understood a lot of that. Did I go through hard times? Yeah, there were times where it was, but that's life. Every day people are going through things. So there's nothing that I went through that wasn't what I was supposed to go through mm-hmm. in that situation. I learned that what I was doing was extracurricular. Life is not going to say, hey, man, you stood up for something. And you know what? I'm not going to let that bill not go through. Oh, that bill's still coming through. And you don't got no money in your bank account, so the bank joint's going to bounce. But hey, mm-hmm. it's extra work.
It's a true sign of purpose, because there's hardship either way, even though you're not identifying strongly with it and you don't, you know, you're not like wearing it heavy, obviously, and that's what you need to do. But you're going to suffer regardless. If you refuse your calling, you're going to suffer. If you Yes. accept your calling, you're going to suffer. But to me, I would any day rather have the suffering that comes with the calling, because it all has purpose and meaning, and it's, you know, it's the richness and the fullness and the source of energy in your connection to God, right?
I think you're only suffering if you don't understand what it is. Like, the worst thing ever was when it all fell apart and I had to leave, and I actually had to go move in with my parents. Now, the cool part was they needed the help financially, but being a grown ass man, because in America, the culture is you're 18, get out. Then I learned that the only culture that does that is in America. Everyone else, like your family, you come home.
Yeah.
But the thing that I did to turn it around, and I'm so thankful, was that I said to myself, you're 30, at the time I was like 36, whatever. And you're actually able to say, my mother and father, enjoy your time with him. Kick it with him, dog. You unemployed, go hang with your pop. See what he need. Go with your mama. And that's what I'm glad about, because here I am 10 years later, they're still alive. But if one of them passed right now, there's not a tear I have to shed. You dig where I'm coming from? Because I saw within my own trauma that, wait, let me kick it with my parents. And that's what I did. So anything that I would go through that was negative, I'd be like, I know people very successful that probably would trade their success for one more conversation with their father or their mother. I was able to be around them enough that we got on each other's nerves. And we laughed when I left, like, yo, that's funny. But I was there. So, no, everything that happened to me, it was supposed to happen. It was my walk. So on my other esoteric level that I would speak of, this was my jail sentence. Mm-hmm. This third dimension is a prison. It's a hell realm. And I tell people it's a prison because your infinite spirit a soul is locked into this machine. You're imprisoned in this machine until it's time to go. That's why technically crying when someone dies is like crying when an inmate gets released. It's kind of self-centered because they're gone. It's just how you transition is based on your innate karma right here and right now. Mm-hmm. So I knew my story. I heard my story. And I had experiences with my story. And so for me, this is like, I'm like the old OG in the yard who been there, who done did so much dirt that I know all the dirt. So I can tell the young dude like, yo, son, just come and do your time, but you're going to be out of here soon. That's me. So that's really what my walk is. That's why I kind of like look a certain way when you stand up. It sounds so beautiful to go, oh, it's a guy's. I'm trying to get the hell out of jail. It's my time. I was told that my time's about to be up. So do what you're supposed to do. Handle your business and make amends so you get up out of here. This is not my home. Actually, in reality, I'm supposed to be with the elite over there. That's what made me almost an untouchable to them. I'm fourth dimensional. They know that. They know that I know that I'm a fifth dimensional being that's down here. And I did some shit. Long story, but I know it. And I've been down here for a very long time. It's time for me to get up out of here. But I used to roll with them. And I have family in them, because the one thing about that entertainment industry, I have family. You got to be related to somebody. My cousin co-created Married with Children, and he wrote for like every sitcom of the 70s, All in the Family, Silver Spoons, Different Strokes, Facts of Life, Good Times, Jeffersons. His name was Michael G. Moore. He's Hollywood royalty. I didn't know that until I got in the game, because there were doors that would open it. I would be like, that was weird. How did this person know my name? Because I went by D. Brad. I never went by David. So if I just meet you and you're a Hollywood exec, and then 5 minutes later, you're saying, hey, David, I used to be on sets and see directors look at me like Sidney Lumet did that. And Spike Lee was that way. They just, from the moment I walked in, Spike would just look at me. And I'm like, and then Sidney Lumet would just be like, oh my God, it's come with me. And people have been trying for years to get next to this old dude. So then when I found out who my cousin was, I said, oh, they knew. The difference between a king and a pauper and the common man is the king knows his bloodline. So they knew. So for me, this is just a way to, like, let me get on up out of here, handle my business, do what I got to do. Trust me, I'm not some guy that's like some goody two shoes. That's why I don't like followers. I tell people all the time, don't follow me anywhere. You might not like me in real life. I curse. I smoke weed sometimes. I think women are still fine as hell. I believe in gender roles. Yeah, it's my job to do the heavy lifting. See where I'm coming from?
Yes, absolutely. Let's use that as a segue to talk about gender roles, if you don't mind, just because that's something that it was actually writing my book that brought me really deep into the subject. Because, you know, for 15 years in my work and my life, I was an ardent feminist. I was standing on my soapbox saying women should take over the world, that everything that is wrong with the world is a man's fault somewhere along the line. And then I asked, right. Well, but I also had a mass awakening, and I saw that the war that I had experienced, as you already know from my book, was really with myself. It wasn't with the men out there. And to be fair, there's so much propaganda that is telling us that we should hate men and telling us that men are the basis for everything that's wrong. So there's a lot of support for that. And, you know, I grew up with women that were always putting men down and showing in the TV shows. It was always the buffoon, the Homer Simpson, or the who's the guy in the Married with Children, like a similar character.
Al Bundy, yeah.
Val Bundy, exactly.
Al Bundy, yep.
Yeah, and it wasn't until I really awakened to what kind of corruption is going on in this earth, you know, pulled back the veil, let myself look at the truth, really got deep into that lover archetype. And then I saw the error of my ways, and I was able to, and it was after my father passed away. So as you might know, you know, when you have that strong masculine character leave the zone, there's, you know, it brings up all of that relationship that I had with my own masculine, not just with my dad. So I went into massive healing. I came out the other side with a lot more respect for men. And, you know, of course, everybody's on their own merit and what they've done in their life. So it never blinds me. I have good discrimination, better discrimination, in fact, than I did before. But now I don't have this chip on my shoulder in terms of blaming men. So how do you see the gender roles, especially right now? And we have come through this, like, we're both 70s babies, as you call yourself. We've come through this era where Gloria Steinem was on her soapbox and she's really CIA. And, you know, so how do you see all this having come through history and playing out right now?
Well, it's funny that you say that. The irony, when using that word, that term, is that in that book, I actually talk about the women's movement and how visually it was led by the nephew, I think, I could be wrong, but the nephew of Albert Einstein, not Albert Einstein, I forget what. Anyway, the guy's name is Edward Bernays, that he started the visual joint. Not Albert Einstein, whoever, one of them dudes, I could care less. But so my view on it is that I don't have a problem with gender roles. I really don't. Mm-hmm. Women, you are the opposite of us. Mm-hmm. Your strength is not in your physically in your upper body, it's physically in your lower body. Your thighs would be would equal my biceps. I just have a problem with it when women think that gender equality is mimicking a little male. It's like, no, you're just now being a little jerk off. So that to me is what I see. And I see as the gender movement of equality, because I say that because that's how I view Black America. Their movement was never for liberation. I thought growing up we wanted to liberate ourselves. Let me stay over here. You go over there. You respect my yard. I respect yours. That's how I always grew up. But then as I got older, I realized like, oh, you want equality. And equality means you're the same jerk off that he is. So that's why you see today with the Black Lives Matter movement that cats are strong on it. And they don't think that it's offensive or hurtful to their white brethren that they may love. Because we were always taught in a society it's either this or that, when the truth is always in the middle. So I just see right now gender roles, everything to me is going around of what we see with Black America, where is everybody's going to be in an uproar. No one's going to know the difference between an ally and an enemy.
Yeah.
And it's either, you know, I'm going to either praise or crucify the same act. It just depends on who performed the act. And I think gender roles are needed for, because it's not about the adults. It's really about the children. The children need guidance. Mm-hmm. And that's what a gender role would be for. Like, what is so wrong with raising a young man to believe that it is okay for him to open the door for a woman? What is wrong with that?
Nothing.
What is so wrong for saying to a woman, you did the most magical thing. You carried another human, you created, helped, you formulated another human being inside of your body. No nails, no glue, no hammer. What is so wrong with then telling you that, yeah, you might be the one most responsible for the upcoming of that child? You would be. What we have now in America is women that go, F that, the father's not here. And it's not just a Black America thing, by the way. I saw that in the white middle schools I would be in, like, oh, hell no, this, I don't accept fatherlessness as a Black America thing. I've seen too many children in regular schools where their fathers was gone to say that's a Black thing. It's not. So, yeah. But what I see a lot of the, not a lot, but what I see a percentage of the women do is they'll go, well, I'm not going to raise a child either. And in reality, it is. If you understand it from an esoteric perspective, your sexuality and who you are, you were the first God worship, a woman. Feminine energy is the stronger energy because it's the energy of love. It's mama energy. That's all it is love. It ain't got nothing to do with you physically being a woman. I have feminine energy because I have love in my heart. Masculine energy is what weighs it off. So we take the yin and the yang and think it's opposites. Nah, your job and my job is to balance each other. And it just so may be that maybe I'm stronger in the upper body than you are because I'm built that way. But right. You'll be stronger in the lower body. But yet it just so may be that I may be able to use my logic a little bit better than you because as a woman, you're more internally balanced than I would be. But then you're there to help balance me off internally. But we live in a society that goes left or right, which leads me to why I get a kick out of the flat earth argument. Everybody has to be right. I think the most powerful thing I ever was asked, my daughter's godmother, actor friend, she said to me, I was arguing with a former business partner. She said, David, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? I said, what? She said, if you want to be right, keep arguing with him and you watch his project fall apart. If you want to be happy, stop arguing with him and handle your business. And I was like, shit, that was deep. And we live in a society that wants to be right. Everybody wants to be right. I have esoteric knowledge. I believe that you all should follow me because I'm right, and it's not true. Oneness did not mean one single individual. Oneness meant a collective consciousness of people all wanting the same damn thing. It just may so happen that I'm the guy who may be able to verbalize it better than the person next to me, but that doesn't make me the one. And it's too easy. So even in this circle that we're in, that's what holds us back from true progress because everybody wants to be the one. Not realizing like, nah, you're not ever going to be the one. It's a cumulative collective thought process. Mm-hmm.
It's an evolving one as well at the same time, because I've come through, my family is very strongly opinionated. Yeah, I grew up around the supper table and everybody is like, you know, so loud and so right and so forward with their opinions. And then you'd see them the next month and they were just as loud and right and forward, but they had some new position, right? So I noticed this is a constant evolution that they were so right. And then they were so right even with even the opposite opinion. And it really trained me to say, okay, my perspective is going to evolve. So to be so, now neither should you say you don't know anything or be a wallflower and think, oh, well, I can't say anything now because I know my opinion's going to change. No, you actually have to risk speaking your truth anyway, because if you don't speak it, then you have no way to actually get a reflection, and neither will anybody be able to use you as a springboard for their own mental, you know, evolvement or their soul's evolution.
Right. No, I agree with that. I also agree with the aspect that a wise man knows he knows nothing at all. So I totally agree with everything that you're saying from that aspect. I just think that I think that those of us who have a certain knowledge base, we empower the others too much. They are scared to death. But somehow they keep winning because there's this facade that, oh, they're doing these powerful things. And I tell the people, the Illuminati, it just means illuminated and it means enlightened one. And they're not the ones with the power. It's us. You don't have to turn the television on and watch everything. You don't have to listen to everything they tell you on the news. You don't have to do A, B, C, and D. There is their job to do it. They pay their karma forward. And I know it because I used to send out subliminal messages to my friends in my shows all the time. So I know if I did it, they were doing it. I've helped create artists by putting messages that your subconscious would get. I was doing it on purpose for fun until I realized, like, wow, if I'm doing this for fun and it's working, then what the hell happens when someone don't have your best interest in mind? And that's when I started looking around like, yo, so we engage so, well, I'm not saying people engage so much that they don't get it. Hollywood is, even for those like yourself, Hollywood has to tell you because it's their paying their karma forward. But what people don't realize is there's such thing as dharma. You don't got to live your karma. You can manipulate this whole system. So what happens is they give us this information. Like if we're a country in debt, how in the hell are we still producing movies in Hollywood that cost multi-millions and millions and millions of dollars? Where are they getting this money from? You feel me? Because they got to do it. So the new thing is comic books. And I used to lecture on the science of superheroes. And I would tell people all the time, all of this is they're telling you about yourself and your latent abilities, but we think that it's going to mean that you're physically flying somewhere. Nah, you're really not. They're talking about your mental. Your mind is that strength. Your knowledge base is that strength. Your knowledge base is what makes you the Incredible Hulk. Think about it. The Incredible Hulk gets angry and he turns into his monster and everybody runs from him. Well, what happens when you walk in a room with a bunch of knowledge? What do people do? Oh my God! You're talking, they run from you. You understand? And I also used to explain the ethnic purpose of it all, where like Superman was really a Moor, and he really would have been dark skinned like me because he got his energy, vitamin D from the sun. So if you gain a lot of energy from the sun using vitamin D, it means your melanin cells are active, which means you would be darker. So technically Superman would look like me. Technically Wonder Woman. So I used to break it out all the time. I used to do it for children. Hollywood tells you. So they have a bunch of new movies out about immortals who have been here. Netflix has one with Charlize Theron, which is very good, called I don't remember what it's called. Jesus. But there's one with Charlize Theron, MCU, Marvel Comics. They have their immortals movie coming out. And I'm like, they're saying this because they have to, because there are a bunch of us that have been here that they know are going to rise. So if I can tell you ahead of time, I can manipulate your perspective on it. And that's what Hollywood's job is to do. So they're not evil in Hollywood. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They are protecting their best interest. A lot of this is tribal. A lot of people in our regular society don't get it. It's tribal. That's why some of us don't get along. That's why you can look at someone that looks just like you and she will say the direct opposite. She's not of your tribe. So because none of us know our truth, we battle each other. Black people get mad at white people for racism because the average black person thinks that everybody white is in on it. Not true. The white people that they're supposed to be mad at are the Freemasons. And not even just the regular Freemasons, in particular, the black Freemasons. They're the ones that set it up so that the white Freemasons could come in here because they get to keep theirs. So, you know, where everybody's yelling, F the police right now. No, F the FOP, because the dude that killed that dude, George, was named Floyd, was a Mason. Every time a cop kills someone, he's a Mason. Go protest in front of the Fraternal Order of Police. Stop taking out these average white cops. Because if that's the case, the only time I've ever been touched by a cop, he was a black dude. So you understand where I'm coming from? I've never had a white cop put his hands on me. I've never been called a nigger. I've never been called a boy. I don't even know what it feels like for some white person to come at me. I remember as a kid staying in Florida for the summertime. There were these white dudes that had like a Confederate flag on their truck, and they would chase all the black people with rifles, legitimate, boom. I'm gonna kill you, boy. And I never used to run because I would never beat it. And one day I'm in the woods with them, and here they come. Boom, boom. Everybody black is running. I'm running with them. Ah! And then I got tired and I just stopped. The truck stops next to me. They go, yo, what's up, man? They didn't say yo, but they was like, hey, man, we're going to get them. Watch. I'm like, what? And they pull off. Saw me the next day in the same woods. Hey! I lived in West Springfield, Massachusetts. There was a dude that hated blacks, gays, and Jews. Nobody would talk to him. Everybody said, leave this guy alone. One day I'm outside, he's swinging a golf club hard as hell. And I just stopped and I looked at him. I was about 11. He asked me, that's how, put it this way. This redneck peckerwood is how I learned how to swing a golf club. I can legitimately walk on a golf course to this day. And come to find out, he was nothing but, he just was a dude that was in pain. He would sit down with me like every other day. If he saw me, come sit down with his beer and talk about life. And like, and he would literally be like, I'm not so bad, you know. And he'd be talking to me, and I'd be like, whatever, yo. But so that's my life experience. So technically, all the racism that I fought never happened to me. It was always, I've been where the cops had me and the fellas. And they would snatch the black dudes up around me and call me, sir, like, sir, can you please come over to the side? I have cussed cops out in Alabama, called them balls, hog. And he was like, sir, sir, please. I have gotten so wild with cops that I've said to myself, like, damn, he ain't put that billy club out? So I don't relate to a lot of any of that. But what happens is that we're taught to look at you. You are just like, nah. And what happens is the same thing what I say in this movement for the women. You're being told to look at the men. But while I was being told as a black person to look at you, the jigaboos and coons right next to me were the ones selling out, causing all the problems. So while you're being told as a woman to look at me as a male, first of all, it's not every male. This is a very white male supremacist system. They're the ones that have all the jobs. They're the ones that go, you can't work. Because brown people, we come from a matriarchal system. You go to any hood, the person at the top of the family is probably grandma to this day. Now, we have our issues, but it was never structural. It's not anybody Puerto Rican. It's not anybody Chinese. If you look at all of the decadence that has happened, any war in this world, you look at a man pushing a button, it wasn't a woman. It wasn't Jamal and them from the block. It wasn't Pedro. It was some white guy that was going, bink, we're going to start this war. It was some white guy that said, women, you're not going to earn enough more money than men. It wasn't everybody else. So I think because we don't pinpoint what it is, it stays going the same way. So women are taught to look at men and just go, men. And I'm going, nah, it's not just men. And I know that it hurts, because it hurt me as a black person to look and go, damn, oh, but brothers still shoot each other up in Chicago. That hurts, because I want to go, Black Lives Matter, white people in a race. I can't, because yeah. Damn, yeah. Yeah. 10 people just got killed in Chicago. Wasn't no police doing it. What, you understand what I'm saying? So when you reach a level of experience and wisdom as an elder, you realize, like, yo, it ain't just, and that's why I say to women, it's never going to stop unless you look at the women and go, yo, you need to, yo, I get it, it's your body, but baby, you can put your titties up. You get what I'm saying? Like, it's your body, you're right. But if you walk past these same men every day and you know that they're savage, why you keep dressing the same way? Like, mm-hmm. Where's the standard at? You know, I see women pick up their children from school and their ass is hanging out their shorts, or their daughter comes to school and her ass is hanging out the shorts. And I'm looking at them like, so you're not going to say anything to your daughter? But then if some older dude says something to your daughter, he's the dirty one? So right. Yeah, there's not a responsibility accepted.
Exactly.
In American society, we don't respond. We don't want to be responsible. I want to just yell that it's Donald Trump.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's, yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm. No, it's exactly what needs to happen. I'm a huge proponent of people stopping. Okay, fine. So something happened to you in your life, and and things are still happening, and there's all kinds of wrongs, and you can all day long, you can make a big long list of what's wrong. But until you stand up and say, okay, this is my life and this is my experience, and I have a lot more control over it than I'm pretending, and take the bull by the horns, start creating your life. If you don't have the life that you want, if they're not giving you the life you want, make that life for yourself and for others. Make it happen.
I used to do the same thing. I would get mad like about women and whatever. And then one day, this OG looked at me and said, "What, you think you special?" I said, "What?" He said, "Everybody go through that, bro. You're not special." But then, and then he also said another profound thing: stop dating every chick you meet in the club. And that's what I say to women. I guarantee you, any woman, that any person, but I'll stick with women here, that's complaining about men, I guarantee you can get 6 men they know, and it's the same guy, just a different suit on.
Yeah,
you got to change. And that's what I had to do. So I stopped blaming women for, you know, and of course everybody gets weak sometimes, you blame whatever, but the reality is, it's a responsibility. And I teach my daughter, don't ever expect a man to treat you how you're supposed to be treated. It's not going to happen. Same thing I say to women that go through sexual harassment in the workplace. Your best bet is to forgive yourself and move on. Because if you think that he's going to come back and say, not going to happen, not going to happen. Yeah. You know, I mean, I had the vice president, the woman, the CEO, Deborah Lee. She didn't want to talk to me. I heard her tell her secretary, get rid of me. And it broke my heart.
Right. I was just listening to you say that. Yeah.
It broke my heart. That was a sister.
Do you want to tell that story?
Well, no, I just called. When the Me Too movement first really, when it came back out, I said, bet, I'm going to call in. Because all I ever wanted was a talk, was someone of substance in that station above me to go, I heard your story, brother. And I would have walked off. So I reached out to Deborah Lee, who was then the CEO of this station. And as soon as I called the CBS building, they knew who I was. Literally, I hadn't talked to anybody from BET for like 4 years. I called up, they said, we're going to write to you, Mr. Bradley. And they knew. It was almost as if they were waiting for that call. But then her secretary did it on purpose because she was like, I'm telling you, it was not me. She just doesn't want to talk. So she left me on speaker. And I heard that woman tell her, get rid of him. Don't make sure he doesn't call her back here again. And that broke my heart because she's a black woman. And I was like, wow. So I thought that women would understand. That's the thing that, put it to you like this. If I was a weaker person, I have the rights to be very disrespectful towards women based on my experience. Right. Because it was women that turned on me. Women did not support me. And I was like, yo, that's crazy. So then on one hand, I hear men never speak up and say anything. Then I'm like, yeah, when we do, where are you at? You run for the hills. Or if it's not who you want me to speak up against, you're nowhere to be found. So that was a lesson that I learned the hard way. Like, would I do that again? No. I don't think you'd ever see me speak up like that. Like, women would have to be right near me for me to, you and your homegirls have to be all near me. I would never again on my own and go, and what we need to do with women? Nope. I've been through it. Not going through it again. I'm not, sorry. The only woman I'll speak up for is my daughter. I speak up for her. Like, I stand strong for her. But anybody else, like, no. I don't believe in humans. I don't believe in people. I believe in me. So I'm not a proponent of Black Lives Matter, nor all lives matter. My life matters. Mm-hmm, and so that was my experience, but I learned from it. And it wasn't hurtful after a while because I realized, like, all right, it's time for me to heal. So once I began to heal, then it was like, okay, I'm not hurt by that. I'm not even disappointed because I get it. In her position, you don't want to potentially lose everything. Because if you speak up for me, what if it don't work out? Or if you let me talk, what if her superiors found out that she actually let me talk? Then she got to deal with it. So I get it. And that's why a lot of people don't speak out in the job. You may go through something, but yeah, if I speak out, I'm speaking out against the boss. So it's one thing for you to lose your job, but then I'm going to lose my job. And you don't know what I got going on in my family. You feel where I'm coming from? Mm-hmm. So I understood that. That's why I don't have animosity. Are they cowards to me? Or I don't respect you. Now, you know what I'm saying? I don't respect it, but I understand it.
Yeah, beautiful. That's amazing. Spoken like a true king. Mm-hmm.
Gracias. Joy, soy, So I play being the habla de español. I'm tempted to learn Spanish. Habla un poco.
Nice. Nice. That's beautiful.
But, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was so like I said, I've just been through pretty much, I wrote about it in BET, D Brad and Me, everything that we see now. I said it was coming. I said that. I think you might have seen, if you read that first chapter, I think the first paragraph and a half, I said, ladies, there's a war coming on. There's a war coming, whether you know it or not. And y'all in the midst of it. Except the problem is we think it's the men. It's like, nah, B, it ain't. The average dude don't really think what women believe that we think. It's like, no, you're talking extra stuff that's done on purpose. Exactly. And, you know, there are witches and goblins and all of that in Hollywood. It's part of life. If you think everyone you see on television is an actual human being, I'm like, I hate to tell you. You better start thinking and being more childlike in your thought process if you really want the truth, and it'll all come, and you'll be like, wow. You know, they do it all the time. They tell us to take other things seriously, but they'll put the real science in the cartoon. A cartoon will really be the truth, and something we watch elsewhere, they tell us it's serious, will be the lie. They'll tell us about COVID-19 and embellish the lie, but they give us a cartoon with the truth in it.
Right, right, exactly.
And tell us that the cartoon is a lie.
Yeah, yeah, it's the age-old divide and conquer, and up is down, and it's like you said, that it appeals to a much more simple brain that wants this right or wrong kind of thing, or it's either the man's to blame or the woman's to blame, and we don't realize, like, oh, there's psychopaths to blame, that's something entirely off the map here, and they come in all shapes, sizes, and genders. Psychopaths.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to get your take on, speaking of pandemic, I'd love to get your take. What happened for you the moment that, you know, you were locked down, or, because I know in the New York area, you were much more in a hotbed area. I was actually recently there I traveled many, many, many road hours to get to New York recently. And it was fascinating because the further southeast that I went, the more people were totally masked up, and I was not allowed into restaurants for the most part.
Yeah, well, I'm in Jersey. I was in Jersey at the time. So I wasn't, daughter was in New York. She was in Queens in the middle of the hot spot.
Oh, boy.
Well, for one, all of us who have been on a path of knowledge and enlightenment the past 10, 15, 20 years, this is what we were working towards, this moment. Mm-hmm. I had been working on being a minimalist for years. I had been social distancing for years. I stopped 10 years ago going to events where a whole lot of people were. You might catch me at a Sixers basketball game, or maybe even a WWE event, because I like those. But for the most part, I stopped going to parties, clubs. I stopped going to anything that was packed because I thought people were stupid and idiots would get me killed. That was my thought process. So the only reason why the quarantine annoyed me at first was because of my ego. Just being told to be in the house at 7, but then it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, Dave, you're in the house by 7 anyway. Mm-hmm. So nothing changed for me. Yeah. Nothing at all changed for me. It was, I thought it was interesting. It was an assignment, and do you really stand strong in your roots and what you're rooted in? Because now you're being told that there's this deadly virus. Now, do you stand strong in your lifestyle you've been living? The foods you've been eating, the work you've been putting in spiritually, because I do know that most people don't realize that the sickness we see out there is like, no, you feel that way about Donald Trump. About the way you feel about Donald Trump is how you really feel about yourself. The sickness that you're exposing yourself to is what you got going on inside. The people that are passing away, with all due respect, with those who are going to transition anyway, they were going to go anyway. Then you have a few more because it is, a time where you kind of got to trim the fat. We've just become so egotistical that we believe that all of this is real, that this is all that I have. It's like, no, there was always going to come a time, because we're supposed to be at a fifth dimensional vibration right now, but the people won't let the earth rise that far. So, I've been saying for years, the planet go do what it's going to do. So you can either take the window or the stairs. It's on you. But either way, it's going to change. So you can either go through. This is actually that split. It's just that way that I viewed it was a little bit different. But this is a split. That split of the enlightenment. You have clear as day people over there. Then you have us. Is that not what was going to happen? It's those who are over here, the 144,000 of us that know what time it is. We're just so spread out. And then we also got caught in ego because we all think that we got to be the one. Whereas I understand clearly that it benefits for me to have been introduced to someone like you. And it benefits you to have been introduced to someone like me because we're literally from two different worlds. And that's what I think is the coolest part about it, is that the people that I've been, that I've had, that have come into my circle, is like, yo, we're from two different worlds. I would have never, ever, ever went on your site unless someone that I would have never, ever, ever talked to came to me and said, yo, you're really good and I think you like. And then I go, oh, shoot, this is dope. And I love it because you're doing nothing like what I'm doing. But yet we all have a similar thought process. But sometimes we separate ourselves because we want to be the one. But your audience will benefit immensely from me. And guess what? My audience will benefit immensely from you. And there are two audiences that I doubt very seriously would have ever crossed paths. But we got to get over our own ego. We got to get over ourselves and realize, like, yo, it ain't just one. I just may be able to speak better in my crowd, or another audience may like what they see coming from me and go, wow, I would have never listened to a black dude talk this talk before. You dig? So that is really what I've seen in this, that it's like, yo, so I'm a little bit taken aback by the people in the conscious community that have knowledge that are actually getting caught up in this COVID nonsense. Like, yo, I put the mask on in the stores, like, whatever. I'm so wise and powerful and strong that I know it don't affect me negatively. Go in the store, bip, soon I take it off. But I don't fly arguing with you over some childish shit. It's childish. That's how I view this, all of this. Like, if you don't, we all have viruses. But if you want to believe that because the news told you that this virus is going to kill you worse than the flu virus would, and all right, well, you know, or the pneumonia virus, like, well, you should have had a decent lifestyle in the first place. How about that? Why don't you go there and buy you some foods, fruits, high in antioxidants and high in immune boosting systems, and keep drinking more water? Go, you dig what I'm saying? Like, to me, I tell people, if your leaders really loved you, they would simply tell you, fix your system, meditate. If you're mad at somebody, let it go. Because all this stuff you're seeing manifest is because it's what's inside of you collectively. Donald Trump is a collective manifestation of the people. Everyone mad at Donald because you're like him. You're just like him, and you hate yourself for it. That's why I don't argue with people that hate Donald Trump. Because I'm like, no, you just hate yourself because he reminds you of you. That feeling you get all up in your chest when your chest get tight, that ain't nothing but pride. That ain't nothing but pride because you've seen the truth. Donald Trump is everything the average American hates about themselves.
Right on. Right on.
So I was ready for this. So for me, it's fun. I tell my daughter, yo, you a warrior. You survived, baby. This was like in the movies, Marvel, like the movie, the Thanos Infinity Snap. All you people die. And I told my 12-year-old, we live, baby. That's something to celebrate. That's a story to tell. So to me, this is actually fun and exciting times. On top of the fact that I actually did get a little a flu before, about 2 weeks before everything was on quarantine. And I know what I did. And I was up and at him like, bing. And I tried to tell people, like, yo, bro, just go home. Sweat it out, take a hot shower, wrap yourself up in your comforter, drink plenty of orange juice, eat as many fruits as you can, eat as many vegetables as you can, make sure you get things high in antioxidants, high in, and nobody wants to hear it. So I go, okay, well, sit by there, watch the news, what left for them to tell you what to do. It's cool.
Very good. So what would you, as we start to close the interview, what would you say to maybe young men out there, or it doesn't matter how old they are, that are considering to step out into leadership in some kind of extraordinary way to leave the ordinary life that the hero's journey calls you to? What advice would you give them to get out there and be able to do that?
I would tell anyone, make sure you do it for your truth. Don't do it for someone else. If you're expecting other people to respond, you'll be wasting your time. That's it. Just make sure you're living your truth. Oh, and one other thing. Really quickly, yeah. Flat earthers versus a globe. The truth is always somewhere in the middle. I'm going to theorize to you that this planet looks more like what I'm about to show you right here, right now. It looks like a freaking step pyramid. It looks like a step pyramid. It would go, it would be around. The step pyramid would be around. Can you, I don't think you can be able to see it. It would look more like a step pyramid. Think of the step pyramids.
Turn it a little bit towards the camera. We okay. Almost got, you want to try one more time?
If you can think of the step pyramid in Mexico, all right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then if you remember that at the time, they call them, this is going to be very crude, but it would look kind of like this. Where is it? Am I? There it goes. Very crude.
Okay. Okay. Right? Yeah.
And so think about how we hear the term seventh heaven.
Yeah.
So what happens is, and then from the top, it's going to look very circular.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just for those listeners, by the way, who aren't familiar, why we're segueing into flat Earth. Just because I've been interviewing David Weiss, and you can check out my channel for more of those interviews on the conversation of flat Earth. So that's how we got onto this. Just so you know.
Right. So very quickly, from the top, it would look like that circle, right? That's where the flat Earthers are 110% correct. The global people would be correct because in the pyramid version, the step pyramid version, all of their coordinates will map out. So what we call the inner Earth would be the very top. There, and as you know, there is an ice wall in Antarctica. You can't go past it. What we call the lights, those auroric lights, that is their field, but we can't go past it. And it's what we call the South Pole. You can't go past that wall either. This is all science. Anybody, this is, you can look it up right now as we're talking. You can't go past that because there's another wall. So it goes this pole here, then they have their wall, then it's us. So when Pangea happened, the planets were, lands were all together, but they did spread out, but it spread out in that circular pattern because that's the realm that we're on. So we got the second realm, with the first realm, which we would call the inner Earth. We have the second realm, which we call our third dimensional realm, because technically we're not seeing in third 3D, we're seeing in 2D. We just call it three dimensions because we can feel certain physicalities. So that's what it makes it dimensional. Then you have the other one that comes around underneath that. And what we have that's spinning is not the planet. It would be the Van Allen's belts around us. Because even in science, they acknowledge what? We can't go past those Van Allen's belts. Those are what's spinning around. So it's spinning us. So each one has its own. So bottom line, if you want to get to all of it, look at the flower of light. That is what that represents, every realm and every force field around it. That's why flat earthers will be 100% correct in their mathematics, and globalists will be correct because the truth is in the middle. Now, it may be even be shaped like a regular pyramid in Giza, but I theorize that it's a step, is basically shaped, because remember, every pyramid is on this planet is as high above as it is below. So I theorize that every realm would be a different step. And that's where they get the seventh heaven from. Even in the cartoon worlds, in the comic book world, with the character Thor, he calls it the nine realms of Valhalla. And Earth is one of the realms. And if you watch the cartoon, they, as I'm talking about, they actually do the similar drawing. So I'm going to theorize that neither of you are wrong, but both sides would be off, and that this planet is shaped more like a step pyramid than it would be a globe. And because even people that do flat Earth, if you look at the bottom of it, what are they like? If you get a picture of the flat Earth right now, at the bottom of it, it's shaped like a step pyramid. So it's just like, think back to all the pictures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Maybe you'd be interested in coming on with David Weiss, because he's always having that attraction to somebody who's not really, you know, down totally with his subject, and then can ask the hard questions. So maybe I'll knock on your door if you're free for something like that. You guys can talk.
I would love to, because that's why I theorize that it's hard for flat earthers to prove globalists wrong, and it's hard for the global earthers to prove the flat earthers wrong, because the reality is, if it's shaped how I said it is, then that is how you can say, well, it's a globe, and look at these coordinates, and you can say, well, it's flat, look at these, because it's neither. Is somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
That's my theory. I theorize that.
Okay, very
and
good.
And I will stand strong in that theory.
Excellent. That's so good. Well, thank you, David, for joining me. This has been a pleasure. I'll just show your book one more time for those that want to go and find this on Amazon, correct? And is there any other place you'd like them to find your book?
On Amazon and Lulu.com. I even challenged that the sun is not a ball of fire in that book. I sun gaze. That's not a ball of fire.
Oh, nice. Good for you. That's awesome.
I sun gaze. Nobody can tell me different. I sun gaze. It's not a ball of fire. Very, that much.
Very good. Okay.
And I talk about how the moon is an artificial satellite. So I go in.
Nice.
It's fun.
Nice.
You'll have fun.
Let's save it. We'll save that for the conversation with David Weiss. That'll be awesome. We'll get deep into that. Thank you so much for joining me. For those of you listening, if you would like to also come to my website, bethmartins.com, you can find out in 10 minutes where on the path of purpose you are, your hero's journey, so that you can find out what your gifts and your shadows are right now at this time and reclaim energy that might be lost to the unconscious. Because we, you know, that's how I survived my cancer in 1999. I was basically told I was going to die. There was no hope for me, according to them. And it was working to awaken archetypes that helped me turn the corner. So now I'm a real stand for helping people do that. If you're watching in time,
great book, to,
oh, thank you. I'm so glad you
great book, yo. I read that joint. I was like, I loved it. I liked it. I think you have to be of a certain level of understanding, but I liked it. So far, what I've read matched up with everything, the stages I went through in my life. And I was like, okay, this is dope. No, great book, if I may say. Great book.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate other people saying it, because I love it now. And it was quite an intense journey to write it. I admit it was a lot of struggle and toil and tears and stuff, but absolutely worth it on purpose. So thank you so much. I also love your book. I haven't been all the way through, but what I have read is extremely well written. And that is, I just honestly, it's so good to have taken that craft to that level, because it makes it so accessible that I don't have to sit and struggle with your words or talking over. It's like, it's right at eye level for me. So I really love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I don't know if I believe that you did all the things, that you was a rebel when you was younger, because I don't see it. Not you. I'd have to actually have seen footage of you in action doing something. I'd be like, oh shoot, look at you. I love it though. Great book. Great, from what I, and it's not a lie. I read it straight through, like got the page 300, but I'm a speed reader, but I retained a lot of the information because it's where I was anyway. So it was kind of cool to look back and like, yep, I was at that stage. I was dope. Great job. But I'm done talking. Great job.
That's awesome. So good. Thank you. So I'm going to put the link to your book below in the notes, and I'll also put the link to my book there, so that if you want to check both of those out, that'd be great. Thank you so much, Bradley, for joining me. This has been a total pleasure. And I wanted to shout out to Janet Gauthier. Janet Gauthier is the one that introduced us. So thanks to her that we met. Like you said, these worlds might not have collided otherwise. So good. All right. Thank you very much. Oh, great. Yeah, that's so lovely. I love Janet. Yeah, she's incredible. Also, one last thing. If you are interested in not just working with your own archetypes, but helping others with archetypes as well, I'm hosting the second Journey Code Coaching Certification Program. It is starting in September. The early bird is on right now. So if you're seeing this, your time is probably good. I will link to it below. And it's, you know, honestly, when you set your sight to helping others, then you deepen your journey. That's all the hero's journey goes. When you help others, you help yourself. So feel free to hit me up for a conversation about that. And David, I look forward to getting to know you better.
Yeah, my birthday is September. Keep in touch. My birthday is September 13th.
Oh, no kidding.
My birthday is September 13th.
Ah, wow. Very auspicious. Yeah. That's great. Well, the program
is in touch. I'm going to take all
that. Fantastic.
Really? So I got to come check it out then.
Okay.
That's so good. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. My pleasure as well, everyone. Bye for now.
Peace.